carry this whole show myself.
Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Through this pen, your voice transmissions are starting to fade very badly.
Capcom, this is Phoebus 10. I've lost contact with you.
I've lost radar here.
We don't have contact here either. No contact at all.
Capcom Tech calling Phoebus 10.
Capcom, this is Phoebus 10.
I've been going over a set of encyclopedias up there and just notes. I've uncovered some very revealing items. There are some pretty basic historical facts that simply don't jive. For example, it talks about a man named Anderson who was sent by the United States government to supervise the construction of the Panama Canal.
So?
So I never heard of anyone named Anderson. It happened to be a man named Goethals. It also talks about an American ace named Eddie Rickenbacker from World War I who was lost on a raft in the next war and never found.
That's right. He crashed, and that was the end of it.
Well, that wasn't the end of it. The raft was found. Rickenbacker was saved. He became the president of an airline.
What if you could travel to parallel worlds? The same year, the same Earth, only different dimensions. A world where the rush to America, or where your dreams of being a superstar came true, or where San Francisco was a maximum security prison. My friends and I found the gateway. Now the problem is finding a way back home.
Open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be Twilight Zone.
Few things here that just don't jive. Well, yes, hello there, everyone. This is Talking Twilight Zone, and I'm your host, Lynn. And we have a little bit of a small room today. I'm doing the show with my hosts, Robert and Bobby. Hello, guys.
I'm here. That's all that matters.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, and this must be a parallel
show. The parallel universe, that's what
they're
it
in
is.
The other show's going on in the other universe with a full house, yes.
I know.
That's where Dave and Rick and Lou and all are. And yeah, we are. We're missing Dave today. He might come in a little later, though. Sometimes he comes in late, and Rick and Lou aren't here. But again, they may come in late, too. But that's okay, because we can carry the show just fine. And
it's kind of heavy here, Lynn. Help.
We have got he ain't heavy. He's my co-host. Oh, God. Now, today's episode is called The Parallel. And I'm going to give it to Robert for that opening clip.
Here we go.
And now, Mr. Serling.
In the vernacular of space, this is T-minus 1 hour. Minutes before a human being named Major Robert Gaines is lifted off from the Mother Earth and rocketed into the sky, farther and longer than any man ahead of him. Call this one of the first faltering steps of man to sever the umbilical cord of gravity and stretch out a fingertip toward an unknown. Shortly, we'll join this astronaut named Gaines and embark on an adventure. Because the environs overhead, the stars, the sky, the infinite space, are all part of a vast question mark known as the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, that, that must have been kind of a great job to have the guy that goes, and now Mr. Serling. I wonder what else he did. I mean, I guess that was his job, to do those voiceover announcements or something.
I like the little harp at the end there. It sounds like you're going to have a flashback or something there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you wonder who does that too. Great jobs, great jobs. Well, yeah, today's episode is called The Parallel. And very brief synopsis, actually. We have an astronaut, Major Robert Gaines. Remember, Major Robert Gaines. And he's orbiting the Earth in his space capsule. And then suddenly his communication system stops. And it just stops functioning, and he blacks out. And he wakes up on Earth with no memory of his return. But he appears to be none the worse for the experiences, and he's released to the custody of his family, his wife, his daughter, young daughter. However, inconsistencies, they quickly pop up. His daughter senses that he's not the same person. His house has a white picket fence that he's never seen, though his wife insists that it's been there since they bought the house. Everyone calls him Colonel, confirmed by the rank insignia on his uniform, when he knows he's a major. And he insists that the President of the United States is John F. Kennedy, a man no one else has ever heard of. So Gaines concludes that he must have slipped into a parallel universe, and he tries to return to his space capsule, but he blacks out again before he can do so. Then he immediately finds himself back in orbit and lands his craft safely. He's prepared to write the whole thing off as a nightmare, but then controllers on the ground subsequently receive another transmission from Colonel Robert Gaines.
So, then he took his shoe off and sand came out of his shoe.
Sorry. And Leave It to Beaver's, the teacher from Leave It to Beaver comes in as the nurse. Oh, God. Yeah. This episode, it had some remnants of the past episodes, and When the Sky Was Open from season one, and also from Persons Unknown from season three. You know, when the sky was open, we assumed that there was never any explanation at the end for what happened, not from Rod, not from anybody. We had to assume they were in a parallel universe. And with Person or Persons Unknown, here's a guy who wakes up, and nobody knows who he is. He doesn't know you know, what's going on, and everything around him is just, you know, freaking him out because nobody recognized him. So, you know, you had remnants from those episodes in this story.
And you also know, Midnight Sun could then show a story, too.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't think of that one. You're right. You know, they're all stories about what seem to be parallel worlds. And they focused on people who ended up in situations where friends and family no longer recognized them. I mean, When the Sky Was Open, same thing happened. You know, guy calls his mother. She doesn't know who he is. Doesn't even say she never had a son. You know, they're all, you know, along the same lines. Now, Steve Forrest, he played Major Robert Gaines, who became, of course, Colonel Robert Gaines. And he said himself in the episode that he entered a parallel world, but he doesn't know how or where it exists. The truth is, it should not have existed at all in this episode because it was not a very good episode. Gaines leaves the Earth, blacks out, wakes up in a hospital, but as Bob Dylan aptly put it in his Oscar-winning song, things have changed. House is different, family doesn't think he's the same person, he's been promoted. And, you know, he talks about John Kennedy being the president, but nobody heard of him. You know, and it finally hits him, he must be in the infamous parallel world, but you know, this could have been a decent episode. But Serling just messed it all up. It was way...
Mom, it's me, George Bailey. Remember me? I'm your son.
I never had a son. George Bailey, oh, God. Oh, man. But Serling messed it up. I mean, the episode was way too long, way too much filler. The plot had way too many holes in it. And the ending wasn't satisfying either, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I'd like to know how he went back to his original Earth world without going back up into space, because that had to have been where the switch took place. And another question I have is, how did he land this rocket on the other Earth if he had no landing capabilities? They told him that. You know, and when Serling gave us season one's And when the sky was open, we never got the explanation what really happened to those astronauts either, but it seemed to work better there. I'm not nuts about that episode either, but it just seemed to work better there than it does here. And
so you probably fit Star Trek in years down the road with Mirror Mirror episode.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
the transporter accident happens and they transport, you know, for each other, but they also transfer into their other person's clothes too. So.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Mirror Mirror. That there's another example. Yeah. And considering now this goes without saying, considering that this was an hour long episode, I think more explanation is expected since the time is available to give us one. You know, I found this to be a very boring exploration of the parallel world concept. Now, years later, the TV show Sliders, you know about that one, Robert, they use this concept quite well. And, you know, it also had some bad episodes. But I take any episode of Sliders over this episode any day. And although I will say the visual effects, they weren't too bad in this episode. They had some decent visual effects. And the acting wasn't bad either. You know,
what you could do on a budget, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, with those crappy CBS people, wouldn't give them anything to work. Somebody, was it Paul, just said that over our group last night or today about the episode we just reviewed, Steel. You know, he said if the bastards all over at CBS had given Serling, you know, more of a budget, he could have done something more with that episode. You know, but... Yeah, the visual effects were okay for the budget. The acting wasn't bad. I mean, Jacqueline Scott, she played Gaines' wife, and she didn't have the greatest dialogue to work with here, but she did a nice job. And, of course, Scott had a recurring role in The Fugitive as Richard Kimball's devoted sister, Donna. And I've always admired her acting ability. She's still alive at the age of 81. And she appeared a couple of years ago in a very popular and amusing Super Bowl commercial for Doritos, although she looked pretty, although she worked pretty steadily from 56 to 2009 in movies and television. You know, she hasn't done too much lately. Phil Abbott, he played General Eaton, who we saw as Billy Mumy's dad in season 2's Long Distance Call. And the psychiatrist was played by Paul Comey, who was in a total of 4 TV eps, including, Odyssey of Flight 33, and People Are Alike All Over, which are 2 excellent stories. And this was just not a good episode. Rod totally missed the boat on this one, but I'm going to give it just a 1 rating, and that's only for the acting and the visuals. So, you know, what can I say? It kind of sucked. I'm going to give it to you, Robert, because I know you absolutely adored it, right?
Well... You're not picking on me from my review of Steel, otherwise I thought.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
No.
That actually wasn't a bad story. They just, you know, if he had a better budget, it could have been, you know, I agree with Paul. It could have been much better.
Mm-hmm. Well, with this one, I kind of averaged it. I said a 2 out of 5. It was a very average story, and I mean, the concept of it, and as you mentioned, Lynn, has been shown in other Twilight Zone episodes. What was kind of curious, when we reviewed this back in July, Helen, of course, we all know Helen had a question that she was asking about how far back does the knowledge of parallel worlds go, parallel universes, so to say. And,
long way, I think.
Yeah, Sorgen.
Back to the 50s, 40s, 50s.
Sorgen kind of gave an answer and kind of threw it over to me. And I'm quoting him. He said, "Great question, Helen. I'd love to know the first story concept. Maybe Robert knows." And, instead of a story, I came up with it back to Greek myth, Plato. Talked about parallel realities.
It went back that far.
Yeah, called Platoism.
Yeah, Platoism. And, but I never thought parallel universes were even mentioned until like the 40s, 1940s. But much later, you know, much later in the 1940s, I didn't think it went back that far.
Yeah, I wrote to check out the writings of Plato the Sea. But Yeah, he had the concept of different realities, different decisions, and I don't know, probably in one of his teachings he expressed to people, you know, the whole concept. You know, you think about also what the Greece myth could be also a look at parallel worlds as well. I mean, the scimitar was on a different earth than ours. Base, you know, different beliefs in that. But yeah, that's what I tracked it back to was Platoism, is what it's called. But, you know, with this one, this story here, the disappointment of the whole thing is the visuals.
Now, see, I like the visuals. I didn't think they were that bad. What didn't you like about them?
Well, okay.
I mean, for the budget is what I'm saying, you know.
Yeah. Here I talked about sliders, for example, and the talk a little bit about the pilot episode. Quinn Mowry was working on the timer, and he takes his first test run. And I mentioned that in the review as well. When I said, you know, when watching the episode, I felt that it was watching a book play out, visual form. I wish there was more story than filler.
Yeah.
One of the things I said, you know, have Gaines riding his car, come up to a stoplight, and find out red means go and green means stop.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
That's what happened in the pilot of sliders. Where
everything was opposite.
Yeah, Quinn didn't know he went into the next world, and he got into his car and he was driving to campus because he was studying at the university during that time, and come to find out that stop meant go and go meant stop. And over, he looks outside the car window and he sees a poster of Kennedy still alive. So
a poster of what?
He got older, and I think he was a senator or president or something like that. I couldn't remember. But he said, you know, stop signs could have been green and square. I wanted more visuals than just the white picket fence.
Yeah, because they really didn't, other than, you know, him finding, you know, facts, historical facts that didn't add up, the white picket fence was the only visual, really, that there was.
And he had to try to explain it through a book. You know, I went through the encyclopedia and I played in the opening there where, you know, I found out these facts. And
yeah.
Tonight, Rickenbacker was mentioned because, of course, Eddie Rickenbacker's from Ohio. And that's how we got Rickenbacker Airport.
Airplane, yeah.
In Columbus, Ohio is because of Eddie Rickenbacker. It's named after him. So.
Don't they have planes? Don't they have Rickenbacker planes? Or didn't they have Rickenbacker planes?
Either that or motors or something like that.
Something.
Sure.
I know there was a car. There was a car that was a Rickenbacker. That was in Mr. Beavis. Remember, he was driving a Rickenbacker? Yeah, I know. We don't like to think about that.
Yeah. But like I said on this, as you did, I mentioned sliders, 95 to 2000. And the whole thing that allowed them to slide wormhole going through universe. Actually, this goes back also to comic books. And I remember when I was a kid reading comic books, besides the superheroes that the comics focus on, they also did stories of parallel Earths. Like on Earth, Wonder Woman would have a different costume than this. In comic books, this was called Prime Earth. And every time they referred back to Prime Earth, that meant this Earth here. But when, you know, they go to a different Earth, one where Germany won the war, and so you have the superheroes fighting on that Earth, and then on another one, Superman, for example, his alternate Superman, if you remember, was Bizarro.
That's right.
It was a Bizarro world where
Bizarro world.
It was squared and everything. And everything was made to be the same on that world. So, I mean, it's something that, like I said, goes way back when I was a kid, and I remember, you know, putting it up. But I agree with you, Lynn. There was just too much filler in this. And as we mentioned about the Mirror Mirror episode, Star Trek kind of carried through with Deep Space Nine. There was some Mirror episodes in that one as well. And towards the end of season four, when before they canceled Enterprise, remember Scott Bakula played that series? Well, they did a Mirror two-parter at the end of season four. So, you know, it was nice of Star Trek to be able to focus on that. And another show I'm going to bring up, since we don't have a lot of people and I really don't want to try to get spoiler alert or whatever, so Guest 4, if you're listening about.
Oh, Fringe. Yeah. Welcome, Guest 4.
Fringe is basically kind of the parallel universe is interweaving into the storyline from season 1 to season 5.
Fringe. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the one with Walter Bishop and Peter Bishop, played by John Noble, which, by the fact, John Noble was back on the series Sleepy Hollow, which is ones that are done by the producers of Fringe are doing Sleepy Hollow. And they brought John Noble on as a, I don't know if he's going to be permanent or as a guest, and I don't know what his character. I think the ratings have been lagging, so that's probably why they got John Noble back on there. But anyway, the whole thing is the father-son relationship in Fringe between Walter and Peter, and the other cast members like Olivia and others, and also you had appearances by as William Bell. He would be interspersed in the series too, but basically that is a parallel universe story, as I said, is interwoven into season one all the way up to season five. And I mean, it's a great show, great concept, done by J.J. Abrams, who rebooted the Star Trek movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also in the past did the Alias series and Lost, and you know, he's, you know, well known for a lot of shows that he did. But Fringe was always my favorite. You know, I kind of miss it. I did enjoy Jeanette. And,
how many seasons was that on for?
Fringe was on for 5 seasons.
Wasn't that long? Yeah, I feel bad, but I've only ever seen one episode of it.
Oh, you should get it, you know, download it on Netflix. And also, it's pretty reasonable. It's like $19.
Yeah, it is on Netflix. And we do have Netflix.
Yeah, for used copies are usually around $19, something like that. But yeah, it's got a well-written stories. In Fringe, there was also some filler ones, but other, you know, what made it interesting was the mythos behind the whole series, which was great. And it's one that I really enjoyed watching, and we were lucky to get the 5th season because I guess Abrams worked it out with the network to settle for a 13-episode season 5 to wrap the story. Because I don't know if it was on the verge of cancellation or not after the 4th season. So
I'm going to check it out on Netflix.
Yeah, Fox was kind enough to allow them to wrap it up, so they came out with the 5th season, 13 episodes. That sure, kind of cool. But, you know, it very much also has an X-Files feel to it on some of the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Because Walter is a scientist, and he works on fringe events, unusual occurrences that happen. X-Files was kind of similar in a sense that they look at the strange and unusual. But with X-Files, it always had like an alien connection with that. But, yeah. But with this story, you know, it sets, as I've said in the past, the roots for other things to come. With sliders, with start, with fringe, and I give it a 2 out of 5. I thought, you know, it was pretty much an average. But here again, it felt like a book on audio, or, you know, like an audio book on film.
Yeah.
And the visuals were just disappointing to me. So, but go ahead and pass it over to Bobby. Bobby?
Okay. Well, it took long enough, that's for sure. But at long last, the season 4 episode I can relate to. Because, you see, I, too, am in a parallel universe. Once upon a time, there was a man named Bobby who lived in a world where the Twilight Zone was a sensational, half-hour-long, brilliantly written TV series with compelling stories and twist endings that often shocked you right out of your shoes. And then something happened. Bobby went home, and not only was there a fence where there was none before, but when he turned on the TV, everything was different. It was some sort of time warp, where 50 minutes seemed like 5 hours, where stories featured nothing but people talking to each other, and no twist endings, since you had it figured out in the first half hour. Don't you just love it when the answer to a story is given out in the title? I mean, it's called The Parallel. And after he walked in the door and mentioned that there wasn't a fence there before, you had it all figured out. So why even continue to watch? Consider, if you will, a classic episode from the past called People Are Alike All Over. A great surprise ending, one of the very best. The main character is shocked at the end, and so are we. Yeah, it's the Twilight Zone, so we expect some things to happen at the end, but not the way it plays out. But suppose it had been titled, People Are Alike All Over, or Are They? That kind of gives it away. You figure they wouldn't put that there at the end unless something was going to go wrong. That kind of gives it away, and it would have ruined the entire episode in advance. So the lesson to be learned is, don't give away the ending in the title, especially when the ending is boring as hell, as it is here. Now, the only good thing in this episode, as already mentioned, is Jacqueline Scott, best known to most of us, especially me at my Yahoo Fugitive group, as Richard Kimball's sister Donna. A great actress who always gave it everything she had, but even she couldn't save this turkey. Lynn mentioned her, but she had her age wrong. She is still with us, but in January she'll be 83, believe it or not.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Would I say 81?
Now, as for this story, as usual, this gets a 7.6 rating at the Internet Movie Database. One person who posted calls it, quote, almost a classic. And another says, most of the season 4 episodes were padded out to fit an hour, but not this one. Oh, really? Well, one of my favorite moments comes near the end when Steve Forrest's character, when he's coming home from his flight, asks the guy at Capcom during reentry, tell me, who is the president of the United States? Now, that just takes a yes or no answer, but no. The person on the other end asks him to repeat the question, and he does. And then the person on the other end wonders aloud, sounds like you asked who the president is. I mean, how long does it take to answer a question? Rod Serling, who incredibly wrote this garbage, must have been laughing his ass off while typing that. A new way to waste time. But then we see that every week. And my other favorite moment comes at the end when those two men are standing out in the hallway, speculating on the possibility of a parallel world. And immediately they take out cigarettes and start puffing away like crazy. Almost makes you get the idea that the Twilight Zone was sponsored by a cigarette company. I mean, they just keep puffing away. They walk down the hallway, and they're having a wonderful time smoking. And you get the feeling it has nothing to do with the story. It's just a commercial in the middle of the story. It's even worse than watching Rod Serling kill himself with cigarettes every story. So, poor Bobby Neer, stuck in a parallel universe where classic TV has turned into crap TV. Submitted for your approval, will Bobby ever escape this nightmare and get back home? Well, certainly not in the next episode. That is for sure. I can't wait to see Jeannie. Lynn?
And we're not talking about Barbara Eden either, are we?
Well, yeah, I mean, as bad as I Dream of Jeannie was the series, at least you could look at her. But, I mean, that's just dreadful. It's just sad to see this go on from week to week to week. And, I was reading at a website earlier today, the Twilight Zone FAQ, that's what it's called, about how Serling didn't want to go to an hour. And he didn't really think it was going to work, but they forced him to do it, either that or they were going to cancel the show. And I didn't realize that. It was on Friday most of the time, but it moved to Thursday when it went to an hour, where no doubt it really got lost. And it just is, it's incredible to see this going on. And, of course, as Robert already mentioned, the no budget at all. They didn't give the man any money. And as I said on our last show, I mean, in the time tunnel, Irwin Allen was told, if you want to do a second season, you got to cut the budget in half. And he said, screw you. And he didn't do it. And he ended the show. Now, I'm glad that Serling didn't end the series because we would have missed out on a lot. But, you know, I'm not sure that I would put up with what he put up with. That kind of interference is just outrageous. And I don't know. I can't think of another series, really, that ever went, got expanded to an hour where it hurt this much. This really has literally destroyed this series. It just is incredible. This story alone, well, I would have liked this story if it was 15 minutes long. But, come on. This whole story is told in the first 20 minutes. He wonders where he is and things aren't the same. All right, I get the point. And that's it. The rest of the episode is spent with people just looking at each other and going, I don't know, something funny here. I don't know. Doesn't look right to me. I don't know. Over and over and over and over again, ad nauseum. You can't stand it another minute. And it just is. It's just a pity that it comes down to that. But the story wouldn't have been any good no matter what. So it seems like season four is never going to end. We've got so many bad. We've got a couple of good stories to go yet, but we've got an awful lot of dreadful stories to do yet. And I just thinking about it.
I think we only have. Is it six more? Six more episodes left in season four, luckily.
Yeah, well, there's only two I can tolerate, and that's the new exhibit and on Thursday with E for Home. The rest of them you can have.
And we get seven.
I'm waiting
seven
for
Seven with Dream of Jeannie.
I left out the Bard. Oh, I'm sorry. That's the one I'm waiting for.
We all want to leave that out, definitely.
Well, I always watch the episode before we do the show, and I'm just making a bet with myself if I can really stay awake when I try to watch that again. That's going to be quite a challenge. So there you go. It's just more of the same. It's just a the opposite story. Yes, as Lynn mentioned, it is an interesting premise, but they didn't do anything with it. They did nothing.
Exactly.
Do something with it. I mean, just don't let it lay there like that.
Right.
And that's it. The more I see this kind of stuff, I get the feeling that Rod Serling simply lost interest towards the end. And I read that at a website. He had told people after the third season that he felt that they had done everything that could be done that was fresh and interesting, and he was probably right. But you got to realize one thing. Back in those days, they were doing 30, sometimes 34, 35 episodes a year. Now they're doing 22 on TV. So by today's standards, the series really ran about 5 or 6 years. And yes, after that many years, I think you would really run out of ideas. But this is just pure agony every step along the way. All right, Lynn, that's it for me.
We're in some sort of known place.
All those people disappearing off the streets. It's been going on for months.
So this is London.
An alternative to our world where everything's the same but a little bit different.
Hi guys, can't be here live on the show, but hopefully Robert will find a way of actually adding this in later or maybe even playing it during the course of the show. Just my little report on the Twilight Zone episode The Parallel, Season 4, Episode 113. First aired March 14th, 1963. Well, I'm not going to sit on the fence on this one. Pick it or otherwise. I enjoyed it. Now, you could argue that it was drawn out and slightly elongated. It could certainly have been told in the shorter time length of some of the other series, but I, for one, enjoyed it. I do like these sort of science fiction and space shows. I mean, right away from the start, you have to take notice as the paper boy's throwing the papers outside the house where, of course, there is no picket fence. So at least we know that this is our universe at that point. There's the quite well-done scenes about the actual astronaut, considering that they were done in, you know, 1963, and quite believable in terms of the way they got him up into space. Well, of course, we really don't get the story going until we actually find the man back on Earth in the hospital bed, and then one by one these little changes in how things are on this planet unfold. Of course, we get the scene with him in front of the mirror. The mirror always seems to come into Twilight Zone episodes. Of course, that's shorthand for, you know, through a glass darkly are parallel worlds in of itself. But I do always like that. We find out he's not sure about his rank. We find out, well, certainly the most alarming part comes when he and his wife kiss and alarm bells go off on her, in her head, because of course she then feels that there is something extremely wrong with the situation. And by the way, I thought there was some rather good use, if over dramatically, of the music at this point. Then of course we get the even more frightening thing where his daughter takes, or doesn't take indeed, to this man and recoils from him and runs away. Now, this gets played out, you could argue, a little bit overlong, and of course it's been done elsewhere. Of course, the film Doppelganger with Roy Thins that immediately came to mind to me didn't actually wasn't actually made until 1969, so we're not drawing on that. But there was some other good things in it. Oh, and I've got to say this for Robert. Love the bit where they were talking about, they mentioned 5x5. Of course, Faith is always going on about 5x5, military term for hearing at 5, speaking at 5, like that. I'm jumping around on some little notes because I'm trying to get this out to Robert prior to going to a an engagement myself. Yeah, oh, and the other thing is, I like the way that they got a reference to the outer limits in the dialogue. That was rather good indeed. And then, of course, it unfolds, and everybody's believing that this is a psychiatric problem until we switch to the scene where the scientist is saying that is not the ship that the man went out in. And, of course, it then almost fades to black as he runs away, and he lands on what we assume to be our Earth, and he gives this recount. He's fairly open about it. Of course, the unbelievability part is the fact that only 6 hours were they out of communication, and he talks about being on this other world for about a week. Now, I was grappling with that time difference, although, again, if you've watched Buffy and Angel, you'll know that they can be time differences between different parallel worlds. Indeed, in Doctor Who, in Hyde, we had a time differential between what happened if you went through the bubble universe and what happened in our universe. But let's move all that aside. The point is that he seems, even as though on his own world now, he's going to be treated as a psychiatric patient until the revelation right at the end when another radio signal is made. So let me quickly sum up, talk longer than I intended to anyway already. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to give this 4 out of 5 because this is my sort of almost hard science fiction story. Well done. I've not really talked about all the different actors this time, but the casting was great, and really a very strong episode, although I do take the point it could have been dealt with in a shorter format. Okay, back to the main call. Bye all.
Well, they kind of changed things a little bit there, Bobby, to where now, before they can give a full 22 episodes, that they test the series out, and usually they give them night 9. They're trying to go by the BBC way they do things over there. They're usually doing 9 now, and if they don't make it with the 9 episodes, then they're canceled on the spot. But
you
if
mean
they,
they're guaranteed to do 9?
Yep.
Whether it takes off or not, they're guaranteed 9.
Well, if it's just a stinker and it looks like it's not going to get any ratings, and usually after the second or third episode, canceled. But
so how many do they do after the 9?
Then they move it up to 13.
And, oh, okay.
Then after 13, then they'll give the full set of 22.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I kind of like that idea. It puts pressure on you to do something decent if you want to live. So, you know, I would never give a series the green light to do 22 or 30 episodes because you don't know what you're getting into. So, but it's just, you know, I there's always this idea, I think, especially when you like a series, that it can go on forever. You know, if you want to do, 4 years or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9, whatever. But there are some classic TV series that ended voluntarily. You know, Seinfeld ran for 9 seasons, and they ended it when it was in first place in the ratings. Can you imagine? You're at the top of the ratings, and you say, "Well, look, I've done everything I can do. I'm out of here."
No, wasn't Seinfeld 11 seasons?
No, I read it was 9.
No, 7. Seinfeld?
That's what I read. That's what
Seinfeld.
I read on the internet.
Oh, yeah, okay, Cheers. It was Cheers. Oh. Cheers was 11 seasons. Yeah, Cheers.
But they were at the top of the game, and they just said, look, you know, how long can you go? So
MASH went 11,
right,
so.
That was another one. That was at least in the top 10. I don't know if it was in first place, but it's certainly close.
Guys, I'm trying to say something.
Why?
Bear fan.
Nobody wants to hear you. They want to hear me.
God, seriously, Bear fan, do you believe this? Bear fan Ron is here, and I've been trying to welcome him. Good to see you, Bear fan. And he said he's glad that he caught your rant, because he always gets a kick out of you, Bobby.
Well, I'm glad I have fans out there.
Yeah, and he said that you love I Dream of Jeannie, that you always wanted to be Major Nelson, didn't you?
Well, if I could live with Barb Reed, yeah. I could stand
You live with me, that's better.
Yeah.
Well, you're no Major Nelson now.
Yeah, but you gave your hair a mouth. You gave your hair a mouth in a way to Goodwill.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, yeah, and Bear Fan, yeah, there were 5 seasons of Twilight Zone. Ron was Bear Fan. Ron was asking. Yeah, there were 5. The first, second, and third were very good. The fourth sucked, and the fifth was. Not bad.
Couple of classics.
Diamonds in the Rough was season 5.
Yeah. Season 5 had its moments. But that's the situation with this one. It basically sort of sucked. You know. And
one thing I remember basically was Doctor Who, when David Tennant was playing the 10th Doctor. And there was a 2-part episode which involved the Cybermen called Age of Steel. And in that one, the companions for the Doctor at that time was Rose and Mickey. And they ended up in an alternate universe where they had the blimps as transportation on this Earth. And you know, very similar to Fringe again with that. And it was funny about Mickey was thinking he was at home. They didn't go outside to look yet. And then they step outside the TARDIS and they see the balloons in the air. And the Doctor has that look and he said, I don't think you're home, Mickey. when did Britain start having balloons in the air? So.
Oh, man. That was what, the 10th?
Yeah, 10th Doctor. Yeah, I think it was the series 2 of the new series, I believe.
Jeez.
Yeah, I think it was after Gurren Lagann.
How long has that series been on, 36 years?
Over 50, hasn't it?
50. Series is as old as I am, surprisingly. So
really, how many years has it been on?
Yeah, 50. It was the first episode
years.
Came out. Mm-hmm. Came out 5 years. Excuse me. The first episode, An Unearthly Child, came out in 1963, 5 months after I was born. And the first episode aired the day that Kennedy was assassinated. And because of that, they had to re-air it, I think, the next week after or something like that because of the Kennedy assassination.
So it's coming up on its 50th anniversary.
Yep. And they've already announced a new doctor or a new actor playing the doctor.
They finally decided?
Yeah. And spoilers for people, hide your ears if you don't want to hear who it is. Gentleman's name is Peter Capaldi. And he's well known in movies. He's in that World War III that's out now. And he's been in Torchwood.
I think I've heard, is it Capaldi? Capaldi?
I think so. He
I've heard of him.
He plays a doctor for the CDC or WHO. He plays a doctor in that movie in World War Z with Brad Pitt.
Oh, and, okay. Well, that movie, the new movie was, well, not new anymore, but the recent movie was, World War Z. Okay.
Yeah, it's out on DVD now, but he was also in the one with Angelica Hughes, the one with Angelina Jolie. He was in her movie too, because I remember he made the comment as he finished doing the movie with Angelita, he did the one with Brad. So.
Ah, yeah.
And he also, he's a big, he's a close friend of Colin Ferguson from the Late Show. Remember, Colin Ferguson played on the Drew Carey Show as Drew Carey.
Oh, yeah, no, you got his name wrong.
Craig.
Yeah, Craig.
Craig.
Ferguson.
Okay, thank you. Craig.
Oh, he's
Ferguson.
Funny.
Yeah.
He is funny.
So can I ask a question here? In these 50 years, they've never repeated a storyline?
Well, like any show, it's been repeated. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
Certain concepts that they did in one, they did the other. They reused a monster from one episode into another one. There was a monster they used in the Claws of Axis that they used in the Seed of Doom. Claws of Axis had the third doctor played by John Pertwee. And what they did with that monster is they brought it, the monster back in the fourth doctor, played by Tom Baker, and just repainted it green. So, I mean, costumes have been reused before. The helmet that was possibly used during Patrick Troughton's era was used in the future episodes for the Time Lords, because some people have commented how similar hats was worn from then and there. So, yeah, I mean, you know, like any show, they always reuse props or...
repeat like, some storylines, yeah.
Yeah. Like, for example, Terry Nation was well known for rewriting his... turning in the same dialect script 3 or 4 times. And then finally, you know, the producer and writer of... John Pertwee's era, Terrence Dix, and the producer during that time caught on to what Terry Nation was doing, and then they asked him to write something different this time. And so later on, when Tom Baker became the doctor, the producers during that time asked if Terry Nation could write something about the birth of the dialects. And so you get the genesis of the dialects during the first Tom Baker when he was the doctor. So.
Well, you know, after 50 years, it must be doing something, right?
Well, we had the hiatus towards the end back in 89. The controller during that time, Michael Grade, didn't like Doctor Who. He wasn't much into science fiction, so he cut out a lot of science fiction stuff. He was more into dramas and stuff like that. So they got rid of The Day of the Tripids. There was a series based off the Tripids or the Tripods or whatever, and he canceled that. He canceled Doctor Who. He kind of let it go downhill to give the excuse to get rid of it. The producer at the time, John Nathan Turner, he wanted to go on and produce some other stuff, forced them to stay with Doctor Who, pretty much against his will, so to say, and so they didn't. They didn't give money for the budget. They cut budget. He had to make do with what he had, and it just the way Doctor Who, and I guess it could be debated among fans how bad it got. I mean, you know, in '89, in the last episode of Doctor Who was survival, and they didn't cancel. Their terminology is hiatus, putting it on hiatus, and so it was on hiatus all the way up to 2005, where we get Chris Eccleston playing the Ninth Doctor. But during that time, we got a TV movie that came out in '95 with Paul McGann, Daphne Ashbrook played the sort of kind of the companion in the movie, and Eric Roberts played the Master.
I like
in that one. But that was a possible series. But because of the airing, and it was a joint effort between Britain and the U.S., they aired it during a time when Roseanne was finishing up and Dan had his heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And so they aired that during that time when Roseanne was popular over here in the U.S. It got the ratings over Britain, but it didn't get the ratings in the U.S., so they didn't make the series. But you could say the TV movie was kind of the pilot of a possible series. So unfortunately, or maybe fortunately for Paul McGann, he went into audio playing the Eighth Doctor in Big Finish. So even though he only had one appearance in the movie, he's done it for years in audio form. But also Paul McGann was a popular actor too. He played in Aliens 3, and he'd been in different movies too. So, you know.
And my brother's a big Doctor Who fan. He's been watching it since, God, as long as I can remember.
Well, everybody's all ramped up because in a couple of weeks they're going to air the 50th episode, and they're supposed to put it out on theaters too. So some theaters are going to be shown it in 3D form.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And also John Hurt, and you know, he's a popular actor, too.
I like him.
He was in the last episode, and he's going to be in this one as well. And supposedly,
he was the Elephant Man.
Yeah, and he also had the alien bust out of his chest, too, in the Alien movie. So.
Wow.
And he was in 1984. He'd been in tons of movies, but...
Yeah, he was the Elephant Man. He was good in that.
Yeah, and then we have the Christmas episode, and that is expected to where Matt Smith.
I'm sorry, Ron's making me laugh.
Where Matt Smith's Doctor regenerates into the Capaldi Doctor, supposedly. So.
Okay, well, let's see. What do we have next? On the 23rd of this month, we have an all-time classic dud. I dream of Jeannie. Oh, my.
With the light brown hair.
Hair. Yeah, we're going to be seeing... Oh, God, oh, my God, I had it on the tip of my tongue and just left my what's his name? Plays that role? Ernest D.
Yeah,
Bass?
Yeah, he was in...
Howard Mars.
He was in Andy Griffith.
Howard
yeah.
Mars, thank you. Jeez, it just went right out of my head. Howard Mars. Yeah, nothing like this classic duds, Ron. I'll tell you, this is one classic dud. Yeah, and he was very good as Ernest D. Bass, but whoa. Man,
oh, by the way, a couple of nights ago, Return to Mayberry was on TV.
I know. I saw that, and I have seen that movie, but I would have liked to watch it again. I mean, it was campy, it was a silly movie, but you know, they're always kind of fun to watch, you know, especially since most of those people are dead now. But no, they're not. Oh, Andy is. Andy died, and
Don Knotts is dead. Yeah, so
Don Knotts is dead. You're right; they are. Helen Helen's still alive and Thelma Lou's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
I think the guy who plays Howard Sprague, he's dead. Lynn loves Vampy.
No, what was her name in the story? The one you mentioned, Thelma's alive, but the other one is not.
No. Oh, is Helen dead? Oh, good Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ron Howard's still alive.
Yeah, he had hair in that one.
Yeah, sometimes he looks like he's dead now.
Yes, and he's heading for 60 years old.
And he's a multi-millionaire. Lucky him. Yes, Ron.
The director is great and producing too. So
yeah, he's doing very well. Imagine Studios, his production company. Yeah, Ron said, "I love Aunt Bee." Aunt Bee was a bitch. Oh man, Aunt Bee was bad. She didn't like Andy at all. They had their problems in real life. For some reason, she just couldn't warm up to him. How could you not warm up to him?
Yes, but according to IMDb, at the end of her life when she was fatally ill, she called him on the phone and said she was sorry that they didn't get along better.
Too little, too late, B.
Mm-hmm.
She was no good. Weren't you the one, Bobby, that told me that you read something where she would only come out of her trailer and
when she was in a scene.
When
she had
no
interest
in the scene. She didn't want to be bothered any other time with the
But
show.
Please take note, the ones that they're showing on TV now that are in color towards the end of the series, she's in it a lot. She's in it a lot more than she was before.
Well, that's because Don Knotts was gone.
Yeah, but she also
left
this because she wanted a bigger part in it or she wasn't going to do it. So put a lot of heat on them to put her in. But she, the whole thing embarrassed her. She thought she was better than playing a matronly old lady, so she wasn't happy about it.
Oh, Andy! Oh, Opie! Oh, God!
Have a jar of my pickles.
Mm. Oh, I want to win the pickle contest. Oh, Clara! Oh man, she was. Yeah, when Don Knotts left and Jack Burns took over. Oh God, they were awful.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like him as the deputy. But oh well, that's all history now. Ron always wanted to smack B when he was Impy when he was a kid. Well, I agree with you, Ron. I did too. Oh well. She drove us all crazy with that voice. All righty. Well, anyway, that's it for today, and I want to thank Ron for showing up, of course, and guest four for sticking it out with us here, and we will be back on the 23rd with I Dream of Jeannie, so I hope to see everybody there, and we'll call it a show. So see you.
I hope
see
it is.
The- yeah.
I don't know what else you want to call it.
We'll call it something. See you all in a couple of weeks, and have a great rest of the weekend, folks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.